Hey, if you suffered an injury in an accident and would like a free case review, make sure you call the super team at Daspit Law Firm. Free consultations are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 713-322-HURT. That's 713-322-HURT. Or you can go to the website, DaspitLaw.com.
Welcome back to The Audition with Del Olale, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Now here's Del and today's teacher's pet, Danny Vera.
Solamente trabajé de enfoque, trabajé tirar detrás y simplemente me enfoqué en lo que es el bateador, no me enfoqué en el corredor, que se envasó ni nada, simplemente dije, ok, hay que atacar este, sacarle agua a todo lo que viene ahora porque ya ese está envasado.
Yeah, you know, I think I just try to focus, try to throw strikes. I told myself I'm going to focus on the hitter. The guy already got on. He's already on the bases, so I'm just going to try to get every single batter that comes up out.
That was Framber Valdez, at least initially, and then his translator after that. Following his nine-inning shutout performance, seven strikeouts, no walks, four hits, and the Astros beat the A's 2-0 to extend their winning streak to seven in a row.
A lot of Spanish words for the A's suck.
Yeah, it's like, really? They're terrible. I mean, I went out there and just, you know, had my B game and completely shut them down. We talked about it quite a bit during the show. The A's are awful. The Astros took advantage. And beating up on the A's is going to be an important part of the rest of the way. But this is a team who struggled at home until this homestand, going 6-0. They were, 8-11 at home coming into it. And as I do my math, 21-19 coming into the homestand, now 27-19, because 21 plus 6 is 27, if you weren't aware. And now, rolling a little bit, still trying to talk down that Rangers team who no one can stand in this town. Danny, do you know anyone in your life who cares about horse racing? Like, really cares?
Yeah, I think I might.
Beyond the betting aspect, they actually just care about watching horses run?
No.
That's what I assume how America treats horse racing. Like, if you're not gambling on it and you don't want to, and you don't get to wear a pretty dress and a nice hat to one of the Triple Crown events.
Have to be a nice hat. Like, I didn't see a lot of nice hats. Well,
you make a point. Some of them are pretty hideous. If you're not doing that, how much do you actually care? And I asked the question only because as I was getting prepared for the show, I was looking at the ESPN's top headlines on the side, and there were two stories about Bob Baffert. One of them was his horse had to be euthanized in one of the lead-up events of the Preakness, and a jockey was injured. The horse was bumped coming out and could never recover, and they were playing California, like the PA system was playing California Love as they were attending to the horse. It was a rough one. It was bad timing.
Tending in quotes.
Yeah. As they eventually had to put down the horse. And then one of the other headlines was his horse, another one of his horses, won the Preakness, which gave him his eighth Preakness. And I was thinking to myself, I'm not going to do the dumb thing where we start comparing human athletes to horses because it's silly. That's not my thought. But I'm pretty sure we don't really care that much about horse racing. We just don't care about horses dying. Like, It's a dark thought of mine, but I thought, let's say we found out leading up to the Puppy Bowl that five puppies died leading up to the event and the aftermath. Would the Puppy Bowl still exist? Would they? Look, it's different. There's not the same type of money involved. There's not the gambling involved. But if the world knew that, yeah, leading up to this, the 2023 Puppy Bowl, five puppies died, would the Puppy Bowl continue?
Depends on who's funding the puppy lobby.
That's true. We always got to look. Follow the money, as we used to say on this show. We always have to know where the money's coming from.
Like, no.
No. But we don't care about horses.
No.
If they die, like Drago, if they die, they die.
Very few people have horses for pets.
That's the thing.
They don't grow emotional attachments.
There's a disconnect between horses, like some people living as horses. They train them, particularly in horse racing. But they also beyond that, horses are important to some people, just not enough. And if a horse dies, and horse racing has a real problem. They've had it for a while. I don't care about horses racing. I don't care about diminutive people on the backs of horses running around the track. It's never interested me. Look, as a kid, the Triple Crown was cool because it was an event and there's less to watch on TV. So if a horse was going for the Triple Crown, great, but I would watch it. But I don't watch it anymore because it's just horses running. It's a different version of NASCAR for me.
It's the horses who have made it that far in their lives.
Yeah, yeah.
They run around for
around and then they get sent out the stud and they make money for whoever owns them. But as far as actually caring, I don't. I just think we don't care that much. We just don't care about horses. And if they die in an event that we don't care about, eh, so what? Most of us don't have them. Most of us don't understand them. Most of us won't ride them ever, particularly as adults. It's just a weird thing that it's like, whatever, five or six of them die before every major Triple Crown event, and it's not a big deal.
I don't know if you remember that HBO show. It was called Lucky.
I do.
Dennis Farina, and I think they filmed it at the Santa Anita racetrack.
I think so.
And I think two horses died, and that was it. That was it for the show.
Like, yeah.
They stopped that show midway through the
midway,
season.
Midway,
they didn't finish the season.
Yeah, yeah, because
they didn't try and do some CGI horses or replacement horses or anything.
As soon as those horses died, the people got involved and they were done. But I think it's always, as always the case, the money changes things, and there's more money in horse racing than there is in that show to make it worth it. And we'll just let seven of them die at Churchill Downs or Santa Anita or Hollywood Park, whatever it might be. I don't know if Hollywood Park even still exists anymore. But, hey, man, there's money involved, so we'll keep running them. And I don't know anyone in my life who cares about horse racing. They just I think I just know a lot of them who don't care enough about horses to get pissed. I don't know why I thought about the puppy hole. I just think if we found out,
that's pretty dark.
If golden retrievers are dying leading up to that event, it'd be canceled immediately. Because I didn't want to compare horses to people.
I'm going to pay more attention to the build-up next year.
You got
to
find out. Look,
in the preliminary games, if something happens,
when the Netflix documentary comes out, you remember we've had this conversation about the dark undertones or the underside or the underbelly of the Puppy Bowl.
Sounds like a Vice show, the dark side of the Puppy Bowl.
If that organization even exists anymore, I think that they filed for bankruptcy and they might be done. I think Vice might be done for, which is weird because they were kind of big at one point and now not so much anymore. But yeah, I thought to myself, horses, we don't care about them. And if they go, they go. They're just not one of our beloved pets. So be it. But if you like horse racing, I've never met you because no one's ever mentioned horse racing to me in any way other than...
You've gone to the track though.
Have I? I don't think I've ever... Have I ever seen a horse race in live? Maybe. Maybe I've done an event there, like a show, but never actually went there to watch horses run. I don't think I've ever done that. I know we've had people who've worked there in the past who love horse racing, but I think that was more about gambling than anything else. No one's talking about Easy Goer, about what a great horse he was.
Dude, how'd you pull that name out?
Because he beat Sunday Silence. That's
two more horse names than I thought you would know.
Remember I said as a kid I cared about horse racing? That's the one horse Triple Crown thing I ever cared about because I love the name Sunday Silence and his jockey wore yellow bibs or whatever. And
you know what they're called? Their clothing's
I have,
called?
I have.
Dale, you know a lot more about horse racing.
But I don't care about it anymore. I just remember things. It's the one thing I cared about with horse racing because I think it was like an 88 or something. I remember that horse going for the Triple Crown and I was rooting for it because I loved that name. And I loved the yellow bib. And then Easy Goer took him out. And I was done with horse racing. Apparently, it broke my heart as a child, and I never looked back since. Much like when Sidney Crosby scored an overtime goal to beat the U.S. in the Winter Olympics, I was out on hockey. I was like, screw you, Sidney Crosby. I'm done with you. And the entire sport.
It's nice to have a time in your life that I can now recognize that you liked something.
Yeah, it's very few and far between.
Something literally made you happy as a child. That's pretty sweet.
I was... And it hasn't happened since. I was listening to the opening, the voice guy, and he goes, Dell's relentless pursuit of a co-host. No one has ever described me as relentless because I don't care about things enough to be relentless. Besides, like a spicy chicken sandwich, I love those.
You're relentless in your pursuit of those.
I'll go to the ends of the earth for one of those as long as it's good. But other than that, no. And if he said he's going to try to find out if he likes one of these guys, that'd be untrue too because like you is not really part of this equation. That's just how it is. We got a couple more segments to go.
And I understand that and respect it.
Yeah, it's just who I am. No faking it here. We got a couple more segments to go in the first edition of The Audition. As I mentioned before, Danny will be here tomorrow as well. We'll have Brad Kellner on Wednesday of The Wheelhouse, and then we'll have Josh Beard. Josh Beard will be the guy. Will host the show with me on Thursday and Friday.
Quick, what's the phone number?
forget. I don't have my notes up, so I'm not going to be able to remember that. It'll come to me at some point. I'm doing this for the next, if I do my math right.
Over-under's on Wednesday for you to get the phone number right.
Yeah. I'm glad I got it because you did have some calls about lowered expectations. If you have those, please do continue with those. 713-780-3776. And on the other side, a big retirement in the world of sports. Not a horse being put out to pasture, but a basketball player deciding he's done with the game, at least playing it on a professional level. We'll be back.
This is ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Audition with Del Olale, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Now here's Del and today's teacher's pet, Danny Vera.
Welcome back. And I mentioned before we went to break about, I don't know if I called him a Hall of Famer, but he will be a Hall of Famer. A former star has decided he's done with the game of basketball on the professional level. Carmelo Anthony, retiring from the NBA after 19 seasons. He was not on a roster this
officially
year.
Retiring.
Officially. Yeah, I feel like the league retired him last offseason, but he's officially retiring. And Carmelo is an interesting figure for me because he was part of that, maybe the best draft in the last 25, 30 years. The LeBron, Wade, Bosh, Melo, and of course Darko draft. That top five. You've got four Hall of Famers, and then Darko, who has a NBA title to his credit. They all do, except for Carmelo. I think the furthest he got was a conference finals with the Nuggets, and they lost to RJ's Lakers. Trevor Ariza, I think, was on that team with Kobe. But New York, which is where, I wouldn't call it his heyday. I think he was a better player in Denver, but Carmelo going back to New York, although he didn't grow up there, but it felt like home to him. At least he wasn't born there, I think. I don't know exactly, but I think he was from the Baltimore area. But New York embraced him. He was supposed to be their next star. And it kind of fizzled out the way everything in New York does. I think the best they did was a second round exit. But Carmelo's a Hall of Famer. I just don't know what to think of Carmelo because the league loved him. You couldn't find a player who didn't love Carmelo. That's why he kept finding his way to teams. Players wanted to play with him.
Yeah.
It was an interesting thing because from the outside, everyone's going, Carmelo, all he is a designated gunner. It doesn't help you win. But the league itself, the players loved that guy. And I can't. The career is a good one. I just don't know if he lived up to what people thought he was going to be. As far as winning, I guess, is probably what I'm
talking
about.
Yeah, I mean, if you didn't win a ring, I mean, that's no.
Then you're no good.
Yeah, pretty much.
According to Twitter and NBA media.
It's nice that the Rockets have another Hall of Famer in there.
I forgot about his time here. That was actually part of the thing. Carmelo came here because the veterans here wanted him. He was one of those guys that everyone wanted. And then when he got on the team, oh, that's all? That's all
magical 10 games that he played
yeah.
in a Rockets uniform. What did he,
oh, that's one of John's... Probably one of his more inappropriate things. I always have to correct him. Because Carmelo, when he had to come off the bench, said it challenged him mentally. And John reversed the words to say Carmelo was mentally challenged. And I said, no, John. He said he's challenged mentally. That's what he said, Del. That was the highlight from Carmelo's run here. Talking about how challenged mentally he was coming off the bench. Oddly enough, a move in that time period for the Rockets didn't work out. Those things didn't occur on a consistent basis. But Carmelo Anthony done with basketball, at least playing it at a professional level. And he'll be one of those dudes people look at fondly. Particularly, I think fans like him, but I think the league itself liked him more. So you can't knock the career. You just, if you were trying to judge what that career could have been coming off a championship as a Syracuse Orangeman, or Orange now as they call themselves, you would have liked more playoff success, but it's not destined for everyone.
It
doesn't. It's just how it works out sometimes. And speaking of that, we're going to have our guy back. James Harden on the verge of being a Rocket again. Tampering be damned. that news came out over the weekend. It had come out before, but more solidified reports of the Rockets expecting him to come back, or at least that's the expectation around the league. And then the appetite for the league is giving him a $200 million deal, which I can't believe. I can't believe it.
It's insane if he gets that. If he gets the $200 million in 4 years from anybody, like I just don't see any team that can sell that to their fans.
Well, the Rockets are going to try, and I don't even know how hard of a sell it will be.
It's 4 years. Like, what do you want 4 more years of James Harden?
At 37, 38 years old, we don't imagine he'll change the way he trains to become a better player, at least a more in-shape player as he ages.
And he's not the missing piece for this team to make themselves a legitimate contender.
No, I would get if Daryl Morey remained here doing it, but has Rafael Stone been influenced so much by his time with Daryl Morey that he can't see past the James of conference finals appearances and bringing extreme relevance to the Rockets that we're making a move that doesn't benefit anyone but James?
I'm just rooting for the Sixers and Morey to get him, to retain him.
Yeah, if you're sensible, I guess you'd say, you hope that, at least as a Rockets fan, you hope that this is all a ploy and Daryl Morey can't let go of his whoopee and he'll decide that James has to stay because we're connected. If I'm going to meet you at, once you get off the PJ to bring you back, when you get traded from Brooklyn, I'm going to meet you there with my daughter, I believe was the scenario, and give you a hug. I can't let you go because I don't see anyone else, if the Rockets are serious and those reports are serious, I don't see anyone else ponying up to beat out the Rockets.
The Sixers can offer him more money, but only like $8 or $9 million more. And when you're talking about $200 million, like what's another $8 or $9 million?
And then if we're doing the whole math thing, he comes to Texas, he would probably make more with the state tax thing. Although you play like you got to pay 41 games out of, well, he'll play San Antonio and Dallas. So, but that whole equation where you still have to pay your taxes for the games you play outside of the state of Texas. But I think it would come out, he would make more here just because of no state tax, but not. It's not a large amount, but I think the money would probably come out to be about even. I just don't get it.
It's depressing to think
about. Yeah.
I'd rather think about dead horses.
Well, the thing you said in the break is far more depressing, but we won't get to just because it's not the show for that. We don't do that here. Look, we don't care about horses. They can die. We'll run another race on the same day. It doesn't matter. The trainer's horse dies. He's got another horse available to win the Preakness. That's all that is. It's horse racing. Just too much money to stop the race when another one of your athletes gets put out the pasture permanently. But Carmelo Anthony, as I transition back, he's retiring in a far less extreme way. And we'll probably see Carmelo Anthony at games around the NBA, and people will applaud him. If he goes to Denver, is he a retirable? Actually, that's Jokic's number, so it's not getting retired. Because they both wore 15, Jokic still wears it. Will the Knicks retire Carmelo's number 7?
Was it the Rockets retire his number here?
He was here for 10 games. You can't retire.
Number was he?
I think it was 7. I think it was 7. Does that number get raised to the MSG rafters, the number 7 for Carmelo Anthony? Did he do enough?
No.
Well, the Knicks haven't had that much success. I mean, isn't he their most accomplished player the last 20 years?
Dude, Linsanity.
Was he 7 there too, or was he?
No, Jeremy Lin was 17.
17.
But Carmelo dropped 60 in the Garden.
This is what I'm saying. Is that a number that gets retired? Because look, the Knicks are one of those teams, much like the Cowboys. With the Cowboys, even they have had more recent success. Believe there's something they're not. The Knicks have won. When's the last time they won a title? Was it the 70s or the 60s?
70s.
So for most of the basketball viewing public, the Knicks have been an afterthought. I mean, sure, the Riley Knicks had a run for 4 years. Jeff Van Gundy got them to a finals. But for the entirety of my life, the Knicks have been pretty much garbage. And you know they've been garbage because they celebrated a second-round appearance like they had won the title. They celebrated a win against Trae Young a couple years ago in a series they lost by 5 by flooding the streets of that dirty-ass city with their bing bong talk, and it's become a thing now that after everything, now it's derivative and everyone does it there in New York. But I wouldn't be, I don't think it's out of the question that if the Knicks thought of themselves as the rest of us do, at least the reasonable public does, that you retire Carmelo's number. He's their best player in the last 20 years. It won't get done because they think of themselves more than they actually are. But I don't know why. RJ, you grew up a Laker fan, so you know all about history and what it means. What do you think of the Knicks? Because I don't get the attention they get, mostly because they've never done anything in my life.
Well, they've done something in our life. We may have just been too young to remember.
They got to a finals.
Yeah, 99.
I remember that. It was the OJ trial. Or not the trial, but the chase. I was at home, not caring that much, because I was a kid, very young, outside shooting the hoop. And OJ drove right by, at least on the freeway, by my house. I know this because all the helicopters streamed over my house. And I didn't know at the time. And I went back inside, and it was the OJ chase. And they were like, I think at the time, it wasn't just beginning, but there were probably four or five news copters. And obviously the police helicopters were following him. And he drove right by my house. I think my house is probably half a mile away from the freeway, and you could hear him. And I went back inside, and my family and I watched it and thought to myself, okay, I'm going to go back outside and shoot the basketball, because as a kid, you don't care. You don't know. But, yeah, you're right.
Wait, so that was 94.
94, I think.
But then they also went to the finals in 99 in the strike-shortened season as an 8 seed.
Yeah, still.
And then you had something, Stephon Marbury, something, Carmelo, and Jeremy Lin, something, Jalen Brunson.
You had Jeremy Lin for like 30 games.
That was a glorious run.
And then you had Amari Stoudemire there, where he looked like an MVP candidate before his knees gave out.
That's because the surgery went wrong on train wreck, right?
Amari punched a fire extinguisher in a series against the Heat and broke his hand, because I think they had lost game 4 or something. They were down 3-1, or maybe it was even game 3. He broke his hand in that series, and that is appropriate for the Knicks, because it's all been about expectations and falling way short. You're right. They did go to a couple finals, but
not with Melo.
Not with Melo, they didn't. So if they retired his number, it's not going to happen, because they have outsized belief in what they are. But I don't think it'd be out of the realm of possibility to retire your greatest player in the last 20 years, but it won't happen. But Carmelo Anthony Dunn as a pro, and I hope he starts a podcast, because that's what we all do, right? We start a podcast.
One? He doesn't have one with Lala? it seems like they would have one already.
I think we would have heard about it, right, if Carmelo had a podcast.
I don't know why we would have heard about it. Would it have been good?
I think on Twitter, at least, we would have seen a clip from Carmelo's podcast. He would have had some guy. If Paul George can get Jalen Green, I'm sure Carmelo could get great guests. I don't think Carmelo has a podcast. I'm sure he's been a guest at some point. But Carmelo Anthony, done with the NBA, retires at 38 years old officially, and after 19 seasons. So a long career.
Rest in peace.
He's not dead. Those are horses, not Carmelo. Horses die. Not Carmelo, not just yet. We got a couple more segments.
He didn't have
to go.
A podcast. Rest in peace.
Maybe that's the name of his podcast, RIP. Coming up next, we'll talk more about the NBA. We'll get back into the playoffs. The Celtics on their last legs. So are the Lakers. So we're going to have likely a Denver-Miami final, and we're going to have the rest of the NBA world talk about how bad their ratings will, as opposed to the basketball, because the NBA does a poor job of marketing their product unless star teams and star cities are involved. A couple more segments to go here on The Audition. Del, Danny, and RJ. We'll be back.
Blue and Red Rule.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Welcome back to The Audition with Del Olale, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Now here's Del and today's teacher's pet, Danny Vera.
We've decided sycophant is the word we're looking for. I'm not a teacher, I don't need a pet, but I do need someone to praise me unconditionally. And that's Danny's job for the rest of today and tomorrow, according to voice guy. We're going to get to some NBA sound as well, because Jimmy Butler, the star of the Eastern Conference, has his team in a 3-0 lead against the Boston Celtics, who were the prohibitive favorite to win the title, probably right after the Bucks got eliminated by the Heat, and that's not going the way people thought it would. But I did want to get to something Danny brought up off air, because we love rankings. It's part of sports media. We love to rank things in the offseason, during the season, whether it be free agents, whether it be GMs, and we have a ranking for your Houston Texans GM, Nick Caserio. NBC Sports Edge with the rankings for all 30 GMs. I say 30 because they didn't rank two because they're new, so they don't have much information to go on. Danny asked me to guess, I asked, and I said, where's Caserio ranked? And he said, guess. And I immediately said 32 just because that's kind of how it is for the Texans now. And he goes, well, they don't rank the two new guys. So as you might expect, he's 30th. Is it fair?
Yeah, it's fair.
You think?
Yes. What's unfair about being?
I mean, the Kenyon Green.
They've been terrible. They've had coach after coach. The coaching hires are a joke.
Are those his? Well,
Dude, he's the GM. Everything falls on him.
Or is it Cal's fault? Or is it the ownership's fault?
He's the GM, so yeah. Cal would also be ranked probably as an owner. Yeah.
Well, Snyder still has the commander, so when that's
true.
When that's no longer
that's pretty bad whenever you have to rely on that.
Well, I mean, it is
not be at the bottom.
It is the world the Texans are living in. So he's 30th. It's a bit of a write up, which I won't read fully, but they talk about all the things we know about here. The dysfunction, even in this particular draft, why picks were chosen, was it split, and they made everyone happy to take Will Anderson and CJ Stroud. As far as the documentation locally, we know about the Derek Stingley thing. I talked about it earlier, how Sauce Gardner was on the board and they took Derek Stingley. That has worked out poorly so far.
Maybe it was because the Texans asked him a question about if he was aware of Jessica Alba, and Sauce said no, and Stingley said yes. It could have been as simple as that.
I understand it. Caserio is in the range where he would know who Jessica Alba is, and if Sauce doesn't know, it might have turned him off. I mean, if you watch Dark Angel like I did, it would turn you off too if someone didn't know who Jessica Alba was. I mean, Honey's not a great movie, but she dances in it. I get it. And what's the black and white? Sin City. Nancy. I get it. I get it if you take issue with the fact that this guy doesn't know who Jessica Alba is. I don't think it ranks above Do You Love Football, which is always a question they ask. But if you took issue with that, as we're alleging Nick Caserio did in a purely speculative manner, trash Derek Stingley because he knew who she was.
It's hard to disagree with him being at the bottom, but that has nothing to do with like my feelings now on Nick Caserio and the Texans. Like, I'm excited.
This is something I am interested in because you make those picks, you hire a coach that people respect, and it can really change the perspective. I know Cal is still there. Like, Cal is this overhanging thing that people think, oh, okay, well, Cal's here. Is the hiring of D'Amico enough just to change the perspective, or was it the draft as well?
I think a combination. Like, you finally have a sense of there's an adult in charge on the sidelines, and you have somebody who other teams desired, as opposed to somebody that no one else was interviewing, no one else was talking about as legitimate head coaching candidate. So you seemingly crossed that mark, and your drafts have not been. They're still waiting on last year's draft to maybe pan out. You give them the benefit of the doubt. And in this year, yeah, they paid a lot to move up to get both CJ Stroud and Will Anderson. But it's exciting for the franchise to actually make these moves and try and rip out everything that happened the last several years and start a new page, a new chapter with some stability on the sidelines and with hopefully some young up-and-coming players on the roster.
I do think if the Texans
pair with Jadeveon Clowney,
well, that's encouraging. That's a story that isn't really a story because the Texans have expressed no interest in Jadeveon Clowney. From what we know, Clowney has expressed interest in joining the Texans because he works out here. I'm sure he would like to get paid to live here again. I don't know if that's a thing for the Texans. We don't know otherwise. We just know that Mark Berman talked to Jadeveon Clowney because he trains here and he liked to play. If the Texans turn it around under D'Amico Ryans, I think it would fly in the face of bad ownership, bad team, because all it takes is to start winning, and then all of a sudden your owner isn't bad anymore. Because if no matter how you got to D'Amico Ryans, if he's the answer, then Cal stops being a bad owner. I don't think anyone says right now that Cal's a good one, but if they found their way into the next great young coach, then all of a sudden Cal would be a really good owner because he found D'Amico and he's changing the uniforms. And if the people love the uniforms, not that's a superficial thing, but people will put that in the plus column, never mind all the other things that happened beforehand. So, but I don't know any good teams that do have terrible owners, but I guess you're not a terrible owner anymore if you make a good hire.
Which way would you go on 5.5 as the win total?
You're going to likely start a rookie.
But you're also in a terrible division.
Terrible division.
Facing another terrible division in the NFC South.
Yeah, and you're probably going to see a rookie quarterback for the Colts. Maybe twice this season. We'll see
and
how
the Panthers.
Anthony Richardson progresses. You see Bryce.
And the Titans.
Yeah, you're going to see. Will they start Will Levis with Ryan Tannehill still there?
I think because they don't play the Titans till the end of the season.
Okay, so maybe Will Levis will, unless the Titans turn around surprisingly, Will Levis will probably be the guy under center. So there's a chance you see, even in your own division, you'll see a rookie quarterback four times. Now it'll be the same. It'll be two guys, but you'll see them twice. And you got Bryce Young, as you mentioned.
It's a tough total.
Yeah, 5.5. I would probably play the under, only because I don't know if CJ Stroud has enough help.
Yeah, I'm
offensively.
There's so many question marks, particularly with the wide receiver group. It'll be interesting to see the way it all shakes out. If Mechie can come back and be a contributor, maybe he'll lead the team in catches. It's just a crapshoot at the wide receiver spot.
Yeah, it's not a formula for getting a rookie in there and having him be successful. I imagine you'll lean on Damian Pierce. You have to hope Kenyon Green is better.
Devin Singletary is a nice pickup.
True. His nickname is Motor, and you can kind of guess what that's about. Guy who's hard to tackle. He'll be probably good out of the backfield as a pass catcher. We'll see what type of offense. Well, we kind of know it'll be some version of the San Francisco offense, but that can have iterations. The Dolphins offense with Mike McDaniel isn't a run after catch offense because of all the speed they have. The one in San Francisco is because of the guys who are run after catch guys. I don't know what the Texans wide receivers are as a whole. We'll find that out as the offense forms and what CJ Stroud is most comfortable with. So there will be opportunities. That offense elevates quarterbacks generally. It's the reason that the San Francisco 49ers can use Jimmy Garoppolo and before he got hurt, Brock Purdy, and make Super Bowl runs. Hopefully you get that type of influence with CJ Stroud as he becomes a more fully formed quarterback where the offense is kind of plug and play. You throw him in there and they're just these easy buttons things that he can hit as he develops as a player. So we'll hope Bobby Slovic kind of brings that along with him. But you never know. You have the maestro in San Francisco. Will another one of his proteges be as successful? We'll see.
They put the Niners at number 3 for the GM rankings, by the way, with Shanahan and John Lynch. You know it was number 1. You saw it, or could you have guessed anyway?
Howie Roseman, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Georgia drafts.
Well, the first one didn't work out. I mean, N'Kobe Dean and Jordan Davis weren't great last year, so we'll see. But drafting guys off the 2-time national champion, and particularly if you get them at quote-unquote value, will help you. But, you know, he took Jalen Hurts and played so well that he paid him a lot of money, so that's going to go in his favor, particularly a guy like Jalen Hurts, who people are questioning if he could be a guy who could throw the football efficiently. It helps when you add A.J. Brown to Devontae Smith, but all the young quarterbacks need weapons. You see those guys get weapons, and they kind of take off. Hopefully C.J. Stroud will get that. Probably won't be a thing this year, but if the Texans are drafting high again, maybe there's a star wide receiver that they trade for or they draft, and it changes his trajectory, but that's at least a year away.
And despite my back-to-back championships on Retro Bowl, I am not listed as one of the top 30 GMs.
You know, I was great in dynasty mode with EA College Football. We'll probably get to that tomorrow because there's a story about that and what the future of that video game means for all of us who used to play it when I played.
You mean some late nights.
Yeah, fixing your own rosters before you actually could download rosters. It was a thing. Midnight releases, I remember it all. Buying a system as it advanced to next gen, specifically because of the game. I don't think I've played a video game since, which it's been a while. I think the last game came out in the summer of 13, but it was NCAA 14. We got one more segment to go here on the audition. Danny will be here tomorrow, and we'll have different hosts throughout the week. But RJ will remain, and so will I. One more segment to go. We'll be back.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the audition with Del Olale and the guy vying to be his sidekick, Danny Vera.
Welcome back to the last segment, at least today, of the audition. We'll be back tomorrow. Same show, at least for the participants, and then it'll evolve as we continue throughout the week. Game 3, Heat, Celtics last night wasn't a game. It was over. You could probably say at halftime when the Heat were up by 15, but it was definitely over. If you had any hopes of or belief that the Celtics would make a run, that kind of got pushed aside very early in that third quarter. Jimmy Butler didn't have to do much outside of trolling Al Horford with the timeout call. That's now all over Twitter because Al Horford did that to the Heat I think in the second quarter of game one. And then he hit a three. They go up by, was it eight? And then the Heat obviously go on to win that game, win game two, and win game three. So Jimmy is a master troll. And he's also a great player, particularly in the playoffs. Here was Jimmy Butler last night.
I remember coming into the league, and I didn't practice because I was like the 15th guy. And I would look at the way that D-Rose and Booze and Lou and Joe Kim were on the same team, but cussing each other out. Mm-hmm. You miss your guy, Simon. It's your fault. And I was just like, damn. Like, and he'd be like, yeah, so what? Let's go down here and get a stop. Don't do it again. And I'm just like, oh my God, he talking to D Rose like that? Oh no, cut his ass.
Yes, D Rose at D Rose. D Rose.
You better talk to Derek like that. MVP, you know what the hell you talking to?
Yeah.
But like, so that's what was instilled in me. And so then, whenever I did start practicing, when I missed my assignment, everybody on my tail. Yeah. So you know, you got to fend for yourself. Yeah, I feel you. But you're going back and forth, and at the end of the day, you're like, yo, I got you. I'm not going to do that again.
That's a great idea.
You know, but that's what I came into the league with. So that's what built me and made me me. That's all that I know. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to be a number one pick. I don't know how to, when I do something wrong, somebody not tell me that I did it wrong and just let it go. That's not how we did it back in my Chicago days. I'm serious. So that's why I'm confrontational. Mm-hmm. When I see something, I just jump on it right there. Boom.
Probably misspoke. I don't think that was last night. It was kind of long form. But that's Jimmy Butler talking about his mindset. Former Bull, former Sixer, and former Wolf. And now a member of the Miami Heat. And he'll be there. I think he signed an extension maybe a year or so ago. He'll be there until he's like 36. Now his contract will be in the $50 million range too when he's 37. Probably won't end well for him with the Heat. But that doesn't matter now as they're on the brink of another finals for him. His second in his 4 years in Miami. Yeah.
They're 2.5-point favorites tomorrow.
Oh, look at that. After being 4.5-point dogs in a game 3 at home when they're trying to go 3-0, finally we've caught up, or at least we've changed, and maybe Vegas is like, hey, there's another way to make money here, and it won't be making the Celtics a favorite anymore.
Might have something to do with the Celtics quit last night.
Yeah, that is what Boston is talking about. As I said earlier in the show, I live off the tears of opposing fan bases. I just go listen to post games of fan bases, particularly ones who think they're better than my team, and then watch. And it doesn't happen often because I'm a Dolphin fan, a Hurricane fan, so I have to live with the Heat, and they're usually better than the teams they're facing. And the Boston media is kind of resigned. Like, this is a team they've seen all year, not to this level, not getting blown out in a game 3, but they haven't trusted this team all year. They thought talent would be the thing that kind of overcame Joe Mazzulla, the rookie head coach, and some of their inconsistencies, particularly late in the clutch. But that has proven not to be the case, where you have, at this point, everyone considers the best coach in the NBA, and Eric Spoelstra, like, ripping them apart. And the undrafted story is one of those things that people want to focus on. It'll be a story in the finals if they close this out. But those guys have been in the league a long time now. I don't know how long you can call them undrafted. They're not 23 years old. They're all in their mid to late 20s. At some point, you just call them NBA players.
They've been so good, like so entertaining, the Heat, since the beginning of the playoffs. And it's been more than just Jimmy Butler. It's guys stepping up at different times, usually at the end of ball games, where they're just knocking down the shots in the fourth quarter. They're so mentally tough. It's just it's crazy to think about this team was last in scoring in the regular season. Now they're a win away from a sweep and a trip to the NBA Finals.
Where they'll face the Nuggets.
And they're doing a Tyler Hero.
Yeah, who might come, who's probably going to be available for the finals, because if these two teams, if the Nuggets close out the Lakers tonight and the Heat do it on Tuesday, the finals don't, well, either way, the final, they're not moving at the finals. I think the finals start June 1st or June 2nd. So Tyler Hero was injured very early in the playoffs, the first game of the playoffs in mid-April. So it'll be about 6 weeks, and that was kind of the time frame. So we'll see if he's ready to go and how that fits into the Heat's rotation as they would get their 20-point-per-game scorer back for a team who hasn't needed him.
I know you're happy about 3-0 for your team, but the conference finals have been a major disappointment.
They have been.
The playoffs up to this point have been great, but since the conference finals started, they've been...
Yeah, the Lakers, like, they've been dramatic as far as the close, the closing. Like, the Heat, Celtics, and the two games in Boston were dramatic as far as the Celtics throwing up all over themselves and the Heat taking advantage. But the series themselves, because of how they appear to be going, have taken all the drama out of them. And particularly if you're going to have to wait until, if we're going to close out one on the 22nd and one on the 23rd, if that plays out, you're waiting over a week before the finals start. I mean, it's what the Super Bowl does every year, and they do it 2 weeks, but Super Bowl hype is far different from finals hype. And the conference finals have certainly been a disappointment if you're looking for good basketball, and you hope that the finals, where it'll be about ball as opposed to narratives and who's going to get number 18, the Celtics or the Lakers, hopefully you'll get a good competitive series. Denver is so good. They're scary how efficient they are, particularly when Jamal Murray is going supernova.
That was that game two. I think that was when the series was decided in game two in the fourth quarter, when he was bricking everything up until that fourth quarter, and then he just couldn't miss.
Yeah, it was Tatum to another level. Tatum's game six against the Sixers, but to a completely different level, because it wasn't just a three or four shots at the end for Tatum. For Murray, it was the entire quarter where he decided, you know what, I've been terrible, but it doesn't mean I have to be terrible in this fourth quarter, and he changed that series. And now the Lakers are down 0-3, or at least I say the Nuggets are up 3-0, and they've got a chance to do something that, despite being the number one seed, I'm not sure how many people thought they would do it, because you had star power in Phoenix. You had the Lakers, even the Clippers, where they thought at some point maybe Kawhi and Paul George would play. That didn't occur. And then you had the Warriors. Despite all their issues as a road team, people thought, you know, that's a championship team. If they'll probably get it together. And they never did. The Nuggets were the number one seed all year, and they continued to prove it in the playoffs. And now they're a win away from making a finals appearance, and they'd be the favorite because the Heat are the 8 seed, and plus they're so tough at home. They haven't been great on the road, but they found a way in game three, and they'll try to close the Lakers out tonight. And we'll see what that means for the Lakers going forward. But you know what's forward for you guys? A different show. We're done. We are done for the day. I want to thank RJ for being the consistent factor, because, you know, he does this every day.
And for knowing the phone number.
Yeah, that helped me. That was a big deal for me, because if I kept saying 1560, it would have gone poorly the rest of the way. So thank you to RJ for that. I appreciate you. Appreciate Danny for helping out. He'll be back tomorrow as well. As I mentioned, the audition will continue throughout the week. Brad Kellner on Wednesday, Josh Beard on Thursday and Friday. I got that name right second time around too, so I'm improving. Appreciate everyone calling in, paying attention, texting, tweeting. All that. Thank you very much. We'll be back tomorrow.
What do you have to say to everyone who still considers the Astros cheaters?
Your mama.
You are listening to...
Hey! Yeah, you. You better be listening to ESPN 97.5. And don't you dare turn that down.
ESPN 97.5.